Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ripple of determination to chart a new way forward, to offer an unapologetically progressive alternative to the Bloomberg era.
The people of the city expect us to do something very big in terms of the creation and preservation of affordable housing.
We took a plan and made it better. More affordable housing for the people of the community. More units for people at the lower end of the income scale. And you're going to see more of that in this plan.
We're going to drive a much harder bargain with developers. We're going to demand a lot more affordable housing.
It will create affordability in the midst of what has been the greatest affordability crisis the city has ever experienced. It will be a central pillar in the battle against inequality.
Advocates report card, subject affordable housing. All this week we're checking in with advocates on the big New York City issues to see how they think Mayor de Blasio is doing after 6 months in office. A big affordable housing plan has been one of the policy priorities of the new administration in the new year, with a particular focus on tackling housing as an inequality issue. But can the de Blasio administration build its way out of an affordable housing crisis that's gone on for many decades? Is increased density in keeping with a progressive vision? With me now is Barika Williams, the policy director at the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development, a membership organization of New York City nonprofit neighborhood housing groups. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to go to the density issue first, because it's actually such a conundrum for people who, you know, are concerned with the quality city, the positive urban experience. And it's such a departure in a way from what we think of as, you know, the Jane Jacobs vision of the low-rise livable city. And when we had Alicia Glenn, Deputy Mayor for Housing and Economic Development, on the show in May, I asked her about density as a progressive approach, and she said this.
I think with respect to the tower and the park and the Jane Jacobs issue, I think everybody would agree that those are outdated modes of thinking about what makes a healthy city. And so our view is that to the extent that we can use this housing agenda to create livelier street walls, connect people back into the urban grid, and support better quality retail and community services, that's exactly what we think progressive urbanism is all about. Not isolating people in towers in the park, but integrating them back into the lifeblood of the city and reconnecting folks to neighborhoods.
Alicia Glenn on this show in May, the Deputy Mayor for Housing and Economic Development. And Barika Williams, do you get what she said there? Is there a new tower in the park, as it were, tower on the square, that's not the old sort of dehumanizing one?
Well, I think we agree that there is a new opportunity to create and integrate residents into a higher density neighborhood fabric. And that's not unique, and that's not new in New York City. We've had integrated, connected communities with high density for a long time in the city. However, I do think, going back to your lead-in question, we know that we can't build our way out of the affordable housing crisis.
We can't
only
build our way out
only
of it? Don't we have to build our way?
It's not the exclusive answer. So, I mean, I think one of the big lessons learned from the Bloomberg era is that development isn't a neutral act, right? So by adding a lot of units into any given neighborhood, whether they're market rate, whether they're affordable housing, right, you're going to drive some of the transition of a neighborhood. You're putting a lot of new units into an area. And so really, what we're hopeful that we see under this administration is a much more careful and thoughtful understanding of what those secondary impacts are and what development does to a neighborhood, both from the market rate side, but also from the affordable housing side.
And yet I think Mayor de Blasio's approach is more development. The question for him being what kind of development and with what guarantees for how many affordable units at what levels of income. For example, here he is right in his first State of the City address in February.
We will lift the floor for New Yorkers crushed by skyrocketing rents by requiring developers to build affordable homes for everyday people rather than simply multi-million dollar condos for the most fortunate among us.
Build, build, build. but different kinds of units. Is that the centerpiece or a centerpiece as far as you're concerned?
I think it's a centerpiece. I think a centerpiece of the current administration is recognizing that a unit is not a unit, right? And so under the previous administration, it was build, build, build. But what exactly was being built maybe didn't reflect what was actually needed in the neighborhood. And so far within the plan, we see that the administration seems to be thinking more thoughtfully about what those units are, how they relate to what the neighborhood needs. Are they responsive to what the community is asking for? Are they deeper affordability? Do we have real affordability units that actual residents in the neighborhood can afford?
Listeners, do you want to chime in? I know it's very early. When the goal is 200,000 new or preserved units of affordable housing, it's impossible to judge the mayor on the success of that after just 6 months in office. But what do you want out there, folks, in terms of affordable housing? What do you want in your neighborhood? What are you willing to have in your neighborhood if you're resistant to more density, for example, as a principle? 212-433-WNYC, or where do you think the need is? What would you just like to see happen? 212-433-9692, Advocates Report Card, subject affordable housing in our de Blasio at 6 month series. 212-433-9692 for Barika Williams. Barika, I was talking to one advocate at an event a few months ago who said she doesn't even like the term affordable housing because it's not specific enough. She likes the term income-linked housing so that it's very clear that certain units of affordable housing are going up for people who make, you know, between $18,000 and $30,000 a year, and others are going up for people who make between $40,000 and $65,000 a year, or whatever the categories are. Do you think we use affordable housing as too blanket a term?
I think it's a difficult term, and there's a lot of things within it, and that makes it confusing and it makes it complicated, right? So in some neighborhoods, people hear affordable housing and they say, not in my backyard, oh no, I don't want that, without necessarily recognizing that a lot of their friends and families and neighbors and maybe they themselves would qualify. And then on the opposite end, there's a lot of folks who will say, you know, I really want this type of housing. I want this type of housing without, I mean, we see this with middle-income housing particularly. Middle-income housing right now, two-bedroom rents are $2,700 to $3,300, and that's the affordable middle-income housing, right? So when people say, I want middle-income housing in my neighborhood, are they talking about that? Or are they talking about something that's more down around 20,000, maybe even less as two bedrooms? And so what people think and what it is sometimes are very different.
So at the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development, how do you come up with a formula, or do you come up with a formula for what percentage of what is needed out of this goal of 200,000 that the mayor has?
So, I mean, I think we appreciate that the administration has really taken a better look at making sure the affordability levels better reflect what communities need. But I think it's going to be a neighborhood by neighborhood basis, right? We've got huge differences in terms of price points for where different neighborhoods are. So in some neighborhoods in the Bronx, their average median income in some neighborhoods is down around $40,000. And you've got other neighborhoods that are up around $90,000, right? So being able to be flexible, mm-hmm. and to be able to respond to that appropriately per neighborhood and what those neighborhood needs are is crucial.
Interesting. Paul on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
You know, I'd like to point out, you know, you don't have to. It's great if you want to build affordable housing, but we have it right under our noses. There's tons of apartments and real estate. The real estate lobby has done everything they can to make sure that the rent stabilization laws, the SRO restriction laws, and all these required laws are buried under boxes. And it's just about the political will. Who wants to put together a warrant squad and go after every single landlord and building owner that's operating an assisted living home inside an SRO building, who's telling tenants in an SRO-restricted building that they have to sign a lease when no lease is required? And when you go to housing court, it's very dangerous because you got a bunch of judges that used to be, you know, landlord-tenant lawyers. So you got to really, really know how to finesse the system.
Yeah. Paul, thank you very much. How much do you agree with that, and how much do you agree that there's a lot of housing sitting out there that should be still affordable housing under the law, but that landlords are, you know, playing with the definitions of?
I think there's a lot, right? And I think we've seen this under rent stabilization, illegal decontrol and deregulation of units. And we've seen some positive signs from the administration on this already. So they've said that they will be revisiting and hopefully stopping and eliminating some of the practice of landlords holding rent stabilized units and renting them as emergency homeless shelters for more than $3,000 a month, which was a common practice under the Bloomberg administration. But, I mean, I think one of the – this is early in the stage is the mayor going to be and the administration going to be really a strong champion of holding people's feet to the fire in terms of keeping affordability?
Roslyn in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Roslyn.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I have a question about how does a homeowner get information about new buildings that are being constructed for residential purposes in the area? Because I'm a new owner in Bedford-Stuyvesant, which kind of borders Clinton Hill, and I wanted to know what's going on with the new residential buildings that are going on that don't typically align with the area.
So I think one way, the first way is to get involved with your community board. And I think community boards are often the first opportunity and the first place that you hear about new residential development going up, what's happening, what the new construction is. And then beyond that, I'd say ask a lot of questions, right? A lot of those buildings have that posting outside that says it's this development and this is our phone number. I think a lot of times people are hesitant to call, but go ahead and call. Find out what it is.
What's your concern, Roslyn? What are you afraid is going to happen to the neighborhood that you just bought into?
Well, I'm concerned about, of course, my own home value and what type of tenants are going to go into the building, what income levels are they looking at to occupy the building. So I just really want to know, what are they low income? Or like your guest was saying, where does that threshold begin? Is it from to 65,000, or is it lower to like the 20,000? What are the requirements?
Thank you very much. And I think she really expresses, the dilemma here for a lot of people. Maybe she worked hard to be able to afford to buy into a neighborhood that is not the most expensive neighborhood in the city, but that is becoming nicer and becoming safer. And now she's afraid that the city, as a matter of policy, is going to come in and make it worse again by the standards that she set out.
Well, I think one thing that I would caution is that national research has shown that low income housing and low income residents, and that's down below the $60,000 mark, in mixed income neighborhoods, really doesn't have an adverse impact on property values at all. Right. So I think the question is whether or not the neighborhood and the community integrates those residents in, right? So is there an opportunity to talk to those people, have them be a part of your block parties, and really build them into the free fabric?
So how do you see the history, if you do, of Bed-Stuy, for example, where she was calling from, where property values were once upon a time, many decades ago, relatively higher, and then they sunk, and people go, oh, Bed-Stuy, that's bad. And now coming back in the way that it is, if it wasn't the low-income communities moving in with problems associated with poverty, what would you say it was?
I mean, I think in neighborhoods like Bed-Stuy and other neighborhoods, a lot of it was disinvestment, right? So a lot of it was redlining. A lot of it was the history of banks literally saying, and the city's history of literally saying, we are not going to put money into these neighborhoods. I think it's important for people to remember that it was an explicit policy and strategic decision in many ways, both by investors and by the city. And that fueled that. Those neighborhoods were really left to their own devices.
And I think Mark in the Gowanus area has a density concern. Yes, Mark?
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. It's a pleasure always to listen to you every day, Brian.
Thank you.
Yeah, I live within earshot of the Lightstone project that's being built on the Gowanus Canal. That was originally the Toll Brothers were going to build condos, 700 units. When the Superfund, Gowanus got the Superfund designation, Toll Brothers walked away, and Lightstone picked up the existing zoning variance to build 700 rental units in two 12-story towers, amidst larger buildings. The sewer system is already overwhelmed every time it rains with a combined sewage overflow into the canal. And my point is, basic point is, development's not a bad thing, but Lightstone is way too much of a good thing in one place.
Too much density, just too many units?
Yeah, precisely. And density is a weasel word for height. I mean, this is one thing we should always call the developers on when they talk about density. They're talking about taller buildings. Carroll Gardens is a, you know, brownstone neighborhood with, you know, basically four, five, six stories fits in. I don't notice tall buildings going up in Park Slope so much, but that's Bill de Blasio's neighborhood. So stay
there for a minute, Mark, and react to this clip of the mayor when he announced his affordable housing development program in May.
People are not saying, we want you to build 200,000 units of affordable housing and put it in another borough. They're saying we need it in our community. The people of the city expect us to do something very big in terms of the creation and preservation of affordable housing and to make sure it reaches every neighborhood. But it will start at the grassroots with a very clear message. Here's the plan. Here's the goal. Now let's work out how we do it locally in each case.
So how do you react to that in general and with respect to Gowanus, if not Lighthouse, then what?
Lightstone. I feel that we've been conned, that it's words are cheap, and again, the Carroll Gardens F-stop is already very crowded. And look, I people want to live here because it's a nice neighborhood, but the problem is some of these developments are going to change that from being a nice neighborhood, and it's tough. You know, I've lived here 25 years, and okay, I'm comfortable, but I'm not so comfortable listening to the pile driving that's going on every day because they're building it on the banks of the canal in a flood zone. We saw what happened the night of Sandy. There was, you know, massive flooding around the Gowanus Canal, as around all the low-lying areas of New York. So sewage, school, the local school is already, busting out.
Overcrowded. Right. Mark, thank you very much. So is this what we're in for the next 4 or 8 years in New York City, Barika Williams? Neighborhood by neighborhood battles against affordable housing at the same time that everybody's clamoring for affordable housing?
I think the hope is that instead of having neighborhood by neighborhood battles and fights, that we can have neighborhood by neighborhood conversations and consensus. And I think that's the cautiously optimistic where everyone is hoping that things will go. But yes, it is a tension, right? So I guess the question is, you know, the under the Bloomberg administration, there was this kind of push for towers along the waterfront, and whether or not a community liked it or whether or not the neighborhood wanted it was really sort of irrelevant in a certain way. And so now we know the administration is starting from a different point, but the question is what happens when they come to a neighborhood that really says, we're not so wild about this?
Yeah, and I guess that's what we will tell over what time will tell over the second 6 months and the third and fourth and fifth and sixth 6 months. There is some news today, before you go, on a key vacancy being filled in the mayor's administration. Reportedly, he is set to name a buildings commissioner tomorrow before he sets out on vacation to Italy. Do you know why this position has remained open 6 months into the administration? Because it is one of the keys to the affordable housing development program.
I think it's a hard position to fill, right? This person plays in between. They really monitor and have to look at all of the units that are coming through the pipeline, both affordable and market rate. That's some 160,000 units that could potentially come through the pipeline. And they've got to be responsive to affordable housing developers, right? We're looking to partner with them on something like the BASE campaign for affordable units in single family homes. But then they're also going to be quarterbacking market rate units and for profit developers.
And one of the challenges for the buildings commissioner in general is how to keep moving forward aggressively on all this new development for affordable housing that the mayor wants, but keep standards high.
Yes.
For safety,
yes.
For post-Sandy resiliency,
exactly.
All the things that we want, you know, to prevent the kinds of abuse that developers, you know, are prone to if you let them get away with things.
Exactly.
So we will see what happens with that over time. All right. Advocates Report Card, the series, Subject Affordable Housing. We thank the policy director at the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development, a membership organization of New York City nonprofit neighborhood housing groups, Berica Williams, for coming in and talking with us about this today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And tomorrow we wrap up the series by getting the administration's own view. First Deputy Mayor Anthony Shores will be our special guest tomorrow. On the day that, as the mayor presumably leaves on his Italy vacation, that Deputy Mayor Shores becomes the acting mayor. So we will talk to Anthony Shores on tomorrow's program to wrap up our series on de Blasio's first 6 months.